I'm very pleased to welcome to Fremantle Shipping News Harriet Harcourt. Welcome, Harriet.
Thank you, Michael. Lovely to be here.
Well, it's very nice to be talking to someone who lives around Fremantle who has such an interesting occupation, or perhaps I should say set of occupations. You're a cook.
Mm-hmm.
You're a food designer.
Yes.
And you're an award-winning food photographer.
I am now.
You are now. Tell us straight off, what's this? What's this award you've just won?
Well, I've won the Marks & Spencer Food Portraiture category of the Pink Lady Food Photographer of the Year competition.
I just love this notion of Pink Lady. Is there one for Pink Blokes?
Pink Lady is the main sponsor of the competition, and it is the Apple that was developed here in WA, I believe.
Well, that's just amazing.
Yeah.
And I'm showing you a photograph that the listeners will also be looking at.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us what this is a photograph of.
Well,
this is it, isn't
this
it?
That is it. I was cooking some pears to make a salad, which was going to be mulled pears, rocket, blue cheese, and pecan nuts.
Oh, wow.
So I cooked those pears in red wine and spices, which you can see, cloves and star anise, cinnamon and orange. And when I'd cooked them, I thought, well, these are so pretty that I need to photograph them as themselves before I cut them up and put them in my salad, which I did. And they looked very nice. I had a shot, first of all, it was sort of pulled back and there was a little jug of syrup and what have you in the background. And then I thought, no, I think they'll look nicer if they're actually a bit shinier with the syrup on them. So I did this pouring shot. So I was shooting that tethered to my laptop. So I had my left hand trying to push the shoot button and the little jug of syrup in my right hand pouring it and trying to coordinate pouring the syrup with taking the shot. So that was the outcome, but as you can imagine, there were quite a few that were deleted because they weren't quite as good as that. And I did manage to capture it before I poured so much syrup that it spilled out over the table.
We're seeing the syrup come down there.
Mm.
It's amazing that you've got it so sort of graphically. And what sort of pears did you use?
I think I've actually forgotten. They were quite small.
I was wondering if they were, I don't know, those other little brown pears, I never know the name of them.
It was back in December, so I can't think what they might have been, those little brown ones. They were just a lovely little, quite small shape. And that syrup, several of the other photographs I took, the syrup was coming, the picture was just about as nice, but the syrup was coming down in a dead straight line. And what I loved about that is how that just gently curves.
It curves at the end almost,
yeah.
Doesn't it?
Yeah.
It must say something about its viscosity.
Well, I'm not very scientific about these things, but
you do it and if the photograph looks good, then you've got
it. Yeah, that's it.
And when you select the photograph to put in,
mm.
Tell us the name of this competition again.
The Pink Lady Food Photographer of the Year.
In?
It's based in London. It's an international competition.
This is Marks & Spencer.
Oh, this category is Marks & Spencer Food Portraiture.
Yes. Just astonishing. So
yeah.
You must have taken X number. How did you decide to take that one? It's just your eye in the end, doesn't it?
Well, sometimes you don't know what you've got until later. Although, as I said, I was shooting tethered to my laptop, so I can see whether I'm succeeding or not. And because something like that, I'm doing it for my own It's just a little thing I was doing for myself, so I didn't have to succeed for a client. So at some point you go, yeah, I think I've done something nice. And usually when I download them onto my big desktop computer and I start going through them and I think, oh, that one's quite good and that one's quite good and that's terrible, delete that one. There's often a moment, and it happened with that one, where even though it's very similar to the others, there's something about it that stops me and I go, ooh, I think you're rather lovely.
This is the money shot.
Yeah. And it just spoke to me, something just about...
Well, it speaks to me. Yeah. I mean, everyone else will have their own conversation with the photograph when they look at it, but the light on the foreground on that pear and then the different textures and the shadow and the colour, and it just makes you, well, apart from anything else, want to eat them, but you just keep looking at it.
Mm. I felt like, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but
no.
When I was, because I had it on a very big screen, I sometimes just get really sucked into my own photos, and I just felt like I could really almost see into the heart of that pear somehow. I just kind of kept having another look.
Now, I have forever wanted to speak with someone who is a food designer and a food photographer, and you're the first.
Your dream has come true.
My dream has come true, Harriet. But, you know, a young teenager comes along and they say to you, excuse me, Ms. Harcourt, could you please explain to me how I can become what you are, a food designer and a food photographer? Can you go off to a university or a college and be trained in doing this? How did you get to be where you are now?
Well, I have had a lifelong love of food and cooking. I've been cooking since I was about probably 8, when my mother actually is and was a very good cook, but she did tend to make chewy meringues, and a school friend and I thought chewy meringues were the best.
Chili meringue.
Chewy.
Chewy meringue. Mm. Oh, I love chewy meringue.
Yeah, well, this school friend, Jenny, her mother also made chewy meringues. So we used to, after school, we used to spend our playtime trying to make chewy meringues because we thought they were pretty nice. And so food for me has always been a thing in cooking.
Almost like a family thing, you know. The Mozart we know had a father who was also a good musician, but things are in families and get passed on.
Well, actually, I think you're right, because my grandmother was also a superb cook. So
did they style food?
No, they just were great cooks. And so I grew up with this real interest in food and cooking, and I had been taught really well. And I think how food looked for me was also a thing. And then I went to Cordon Bleu School, which was in Auckland in those days, and that was just something I wanted to do because I'd always been interested in doing it.
Did you imagine you were going to become a chef in a fancy
restaurant? I had no intention of using it for work purposes. It was just a point in my life where it was a thing that I, you know, it was something, an opportunity to do it. But I think that's where I got interested in food styling, because the women, there were all women teachers, and they were all interested in the food magazines that were around at the time. We're talking 1984, I'm quite old. And that's what sort of sparked my interest in that side of it.
And there's no doubt, is there, that you see, whether it's online today or in a recipe book, a photograph and you say, boy, the ingredients look really interesting.
Yes.
That looks like a really interesting outcome. I want to make it.
Yeah.
And so it's probably like real estate agents selling a house. The photographs become important to hook people in the first instance.
Mm.
And so did you make a conscious decision to get into food styling?
At some point I did. I think it was later when I was back in Wellington and I had taken up catering, even though I hadn't intended to work with food. I had a friend in the film industry who said, do you want to do some catering? And I went, okay, because I had no idea what I was getting myself into. And I remember now, I also then was catering for TV commercials where they had a food stylist on set, and I went, I want to do what they're doing.
Ah, so that's just an interesting entree, isn't it?
Yeah.
You've got a friend doing this.
Yeah.
By the way, the reference to the chili earlier was not an entire mistake. I was in an Uber recently with an Indian driver, and we were discussing yogurt and Indian food, and he was appalled that I was still buying my own yogurt, although I occasionally make it. And he gave me his recipe making your own. And he said, and when you've got it all ready to put in the oven just to sit there for 15 hours, put a red chili on top. Just rest it there.
What for? That sounds fascinating.
Well, I don't know the answer. And I haven't done it yet. So film industry, and we're going to come back to this, gives you an entree to seeing people food styling, and you think, I want to do that.
Mm.
So what was the first food styling you did?
Oh, Kentucky Fried Chicken.
Can you style Kentucky Fried Chicken? Well, I should be careful.
That was interesting because there were lots of rules, which one of them was that the coleslaw had to have all the greenest bits of cabbage. And they sent, I remember now, it was a long time ago, they sent a man from KFC in a truck and he cooked all the chicken. And there were some very strict things about how it had to look. So he cooked it all and I arranged it nicely and, you know, cut up the green bits of cabbage and what have you. Probably can't tell you much more than that because I think I've wiped the rest of it from my mind. But so it wasn't the most glamorous first food styling job, but it was a toe in the door. And to answer your question, backing the bus up a little bit, in those days it was a very secretive industry. It was very hard to get into. Also, it was still film, remember? There was no digital photography.
Of course.
So it was much more fraught because you didn't know if everything had worked out until that, until later on. Yeah.
Yes.
And people were very, very closed about what they did. So every time I did a job, you're basically feeling your way and kind of figuring it out for yourself, which is really a lot of what it's about is problem solving anyway. But these days there's lots and lots of books. There's people doing videos on YouTube and there are courses and things you can do about it. If someone came to me and asked me about it, I'd say, well, first of all, you need to know how to cook and how food behaves.
So this is following in a very linear way what you've done. You love of cooking, you know how to cook, you go into catering. You then see what's happening with food styling and photography. You want to be engaged in that, particularly the food styling.
Mm.
How then do you move, or how did you move, into the food photography as well?
Well, that was just a happy accident, really, because I hadn't really ever taken much interest in how the photographers did their part of the job.
And they are photographers, is an important point, isn't it?
Mm.
And you are a photographer.
Well, I am now, but when I first came to Western Australia, when I got off the plane, if you'd said to me, oh, in a few years you'll be working as a photographer, I would have said, oh, I think you've got the wrong person. So
10 years ago, thereabouts, you wouldn't have, apart from taking happy snaps.
Yeah, I had a little digital camera that I'd never learnt how to use and didn't know anyone here. Was on my own a lot because my partner was away working, and so I would sort of roam the streets exploring and taking
with your digital camera.
With my little digital camera and taking pictures of things that, like bees and flowers, and you know, as you do. But it sparked enough of an interest for me to feel like, oh, I'm actually. And people were saying things like, you've got an eye for this and you should be doing food. And I'd be going, no, I don't want to do food. This is a hobby. But I did get interested enough to think, I need to understand more about how to do the photography because I can't capture what I can see in the way I want to. And so I did go and do a few lessons, and at about the same time, a friend said to me, a friend who knew stuff, who said...
Knew stuff about food photography?
She was the food editor of a magazine, and she said to me, you should be doing food. And I trotted out my no, it's a hobby line, and she said, well, things aren't the way they used to be, and you need to be more versatile, it'll make you more marketable. So I came home and thought about it and went, well, perhaps she's got a point, because was struggling to break into the food styling industry here anyway. So I thought, oh, well, if I get better at photography, concentrate on photographing food, I can update my portfolio.
Then you're not just a caterer, you're not just a food stylist, and you're not just a food photographer. You're everything.
Yeah.
And you really still have all of those current skills.
Mm. Well, I'm having a long break from catering. I've given it up four times. And I don't say I've given it up now, I just say I'm having a break. This is the longest that I've managed, which is now about 10 years. And I don't think of myself as a caterer anymore, which has taken a while.
Well, if you start winning prizes like you just won it, you'll be nothing but a food photographer.
Mm.
But do you, when you're a food photographer, do you just photograph somebody else's styled food, or do you actually do it yourself and then photograph it? How does it work, or is it a mix of all of those things?
It's a mix, and a lot of people are doing both these days, because with digital photography and the way the world's changed, a lot of people are doing both. It's not actually that easy, but again, you know, it just makes you more versatile in the world. But I can do one or both, and I frequently wear different hats. Like, I can develop the recipe for you,
yes,
and I can style it, and I can photograph it.
Wow.
I can go and work for a client who has a food product they need photographed, and I can photograph it and work with another food stylist, or I can be the food stylist and work with another photographer. So my friend who knew stuff was quite right.
That's quite right. Well, we've looked at that photograph of the pears.
Mm.
Let's look at a couple of other photographs. What have we got here?
This was Anthony Bourdain's preferred Last Supper.
The late Anthony Bourdain.
Anthony Bourdain, yes. That was a bit sad.
It was, wasn't it?
I was in Woolworths and I saw these great big marrow bones and I thought, oh, they're so ugly and gnarly, I want to photograph them. And then I was Googling ideas for recipes and read that Anthony Bourdain said that would be his last supper. It's basically roasted bone marrow with a parsley and red onion salad.
Such a tribute to him in many ways.
Well, it turned into one. I didn't mean it to, but it turned into one because of what happened next. But it's kind of an ugly photo, but it's also...
Well, it's an intriguing photo, yeah, because you're wondering what on earth all that bone is, but then yeah, you're told what you tell us. And there's so many things to do. You've got a knife there, which presumably can scoop the marrow.
Yes.
You've got the lovely, well, they're just small, like French bread, or just small yeah, loaf that's been sliced thinly.
Mm-hmm. Toasted. I wanted to photograph it not sort of sanitised, if you like, because I could have cut the knobbly ends off and just had that nice little, you know, done something with yeah, the little piece of bone in the middle. And I thought, no, I want to shoot it with in its kind of gloriously ugly wholeness.
Now, I've regressed in my photographic life. I'm now, although the Apple people would say I've probably progressed, I'm now just using an Apple iPhone 11.
Yeah.
But what do you use to take these shots for the aficionado out there?
That was shot on a Nikon D750. With a 105mm macro lens.
Wow, and that's the shot you get. Now, did that photograph have a life? Was it for anybody apart from what you've described? Did it go somewhere? Has it been
No,
displayed?
That was another one of my... I realised when you asked me for some pictures that I think I've given you pretty much everything. It's just stuff that I did for my own enjoyment.
Well, that's great. We'll talk about other things. Now, look at this here. This is I'm not even going to guess what this is. It looks like vermicelli or something.
It's burrata. Now that
is it?
Was the first photograph that I had shortlisted in the Pink Lady competition in 2017. And that was photographed on the day of the deadline. I had all my entries that I'd put in.
You had to get it in last minute. What am I going to do?
I saw this in the shop and I thought, oh, that looks intriguing. And I took it home and was fiddling around taking pictures of it. And all the, you know how inside it's got that watery, if
yes,
you break it open, it's got that sort of creamy and the curds and what have you.
Yes.
It was starting to leak. And that was another one of those. I just managed to capture it before it fell apart. And when I put it up on my screen, I went, oh, it's rather lovely.
Mm.
So I threw that in as a last minute entry, and that was shortlisted.
Wow.
And that's just because it was so delicious. I love that photo.
Now, this photo here looks like it's got lots of little mandarins.
Yeah, it's a ginger cake with caramelized mandarins.
Wow.
Which had come off a friend's tree. Oh, our neighbor's tree. We've got an Italian neighbor. Oh, my goodness. We've got this teeny tiny garden.
You don't have to go down the shop.
And I can keep parsley alive.
Yes.
And right over the fence, not only is he a crayfisherman and rather generous, but he's got this fantastic garden. And those mandarins came off his tree. They were so delicious and juicy.
And there's the ginger cake sitting on a cooking
baking tray.
And the whole thing has that authenticity about it. These are, in a sense, your personal favourites that you're sharing. But tell me, I can remember years ago people suggesting that what you saw in a photograph of a recipe, which had been produced and looked fantastic, was often faked, or colours were added. And you hear all these things, that they may well be urban myths.
Yeah. Well, the truth is now, pretty much every photo that we've looked at so far, I've eaten the subject
exactly.
afterwards.
Yes.
Sounds quite bad, doesn't it? But
You've shared it.
Mostly I've shared it.
Mostly, all right, I won't interrogate you.
There are lots of stories about what the terrible things that we did to food, and it's inedible, and it's really not true anymore. Although I did actually last week work on a big TV commercial that involved a lot of food, and people kept saying to me, oh, why can't we eat the food? And I was saying, it's not, it's made to look good. I haven't made it to taste great, and also it's been sitting around for some hours now. It's just not safe to eat. So depends on the context. If the people in the commercial had to eat it, then I would have made sure, obviously, not to poison them. But all of these photos that we're looking at, this is real food. Oh, I threw that in because I just liked the whimsy of that.
Well, I once saw a movie which lingers with me, the thief, cook, his wife, and her lover. And for those who saw that, we'll look at this and we'll sort of be wondering about that thing.
It's completely uncontrived.
Leg.
And that's what, so technically it's not a brilliant photo, but what I loved about it was that I was there to, it was a masterclass on how to break down a cuts of meat from, I think there was pork and I think there was beef as well. And I was standing at the back of the room, and this literally just, I looked up and I saw this. So there's obviously a leg of pork and it's not a standing rib roast, what is that? Anyway, it's bones and cutlet and things, and another leg. And I noticed that the guy in front of me was hanging off the hook because he was just relaxing, and I thought, this is just brilliant. And I took the photo and I thought, I can't interrupt everybody and say, this is my lovely partner, can you get out of the way, and can you get out of the way, and can you just keep doing that while I take a... But I just loved that. It was completely random.
It's a bit worrying. But this, by contrast, this pasta, what's this all about?
Well, the reason I included that was that I had the loveliest day with a friend who happens to be French, and we'd had this cooking day where she wanted to try a Jamie Oliver pasta recipe. She also baked French biscuits, and I've forgotten what they were called, but they're a traditional thing that you have at Christmas. And we'd made a pineapple upside down cake and something else. And so I was worried, this is actually her kitchen dining table. And I just loved the way the light was coming in behind and kind of lit up this. Now the downside of the story is that, and what I wouldn't normally tell people, is it looked a lot better than it tasted. I took some home and cooked, and it was dreadful. We'd made it by hand, and we'd cut it by hand and rolled it and everything by hand.
You need to roll a bit harder, Harriet.
Yes, but it was the memory of a really happy day.
Yes.
And so it sort of didn't matter that it didn't taste that good.
Well, we'll just ignore what you said. It looks lovely. And
there was a reason for that too, because the story to this is I think it's actually a savoury tart, but it's got pomegranate arils all over it. And it was taken at the South Fremantle farmer's market. What do they call it? Growers Green Farmer's Market.
Down on...
in Lefroy.
In Lefroy Street.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I was still... That was in the very early, okay, well, I'll have a go at food photography then. And I was trying to get the hang of a new camera, which isn't the one I mentioned before. And I asked the woman if she would mind holding the little tart up for me to photograph. And again, what I discovered later on, this is sort of a controversial one, because her fingernails, I just love the way her fingernails more or less match the,
yes,
the pomegranate. And I really love that the nail polish is chipped.
Yes.
But not everyone loves that. Some people go, oh, you should have checked her fingernails. And I'm thinking, that's what I like about it.
Come in with Sophia Loren shaped and varnished nails, you'd think that person who had nothing to do with this product had been asked to hold it.
Yes.
Whereas this lady
is very real
looks like
to me.
She's lovingly made it.
Yeah, that's what I loved about it.
Now, this one here is could be controversial, probably not to be eaten by a film crew or anyone else.
This was actually
squashed.
This was another one that was shortlisted the next year in the Pink Lady competition.
Wow.
And the category was food in action. And it's a class on fermenting and making sauerkraut.
I love sauerkraut.
The person in the background is Guy Jeffries, who's the executive chef for the Fogarty Wine Group, Millbrook Winery and various others. And he had these, like, literally a half wine barrel. They all cut up cabbage, like mountains of cabbage.
He was at work.
Yes, he was. And so you basically, you know, raft of cut up cabbage, whole lot of salt, and then he was getting everyone to knead the cabbage.
This is just after you'd been in the wine barrel crunching the
There's more
grapes.
To the story, I've just remembered. So I was asked, this is, again, I shouldn't tell these stories out loud, should I? I was on my way to photograph this event, and it was at night, and I hadn't really learnt how to shoot at night. Literally on the way to do this job, which was for a friend, it was a favour, I stopped off at a place that I get equipment from, and I said, I need to buy a flash, because I'm going to photograph this event, and I need to buy a flash. And so the guy sold me the appropriate piece of equipment, and as I was walking out the door, I said, well, so how do I, like, what settings do I put it on? And he quickly told me, I got to this job early, job that was a favour, and ran around taking pictures with this flash.
With the flash?
To get the hang of it. And so again, you know, that I thought, oh, that's quite cool. See how the drops of...
So you took this with a flash?
I did.
You didn't have any other light and with your flash off?
Just the flash on the camera. It's not how I would normally work, to be honest. But see how these drips are coming off of,
yes,
of coloured salt, what do you mean, brine. I rather liked it, so I entered that in the competition, and that was shortlisted.
Well, it makes you stop for a while to work out...
What's going on here?
What's going on, because the hands seem, in a way, disconnected from those strong wrists, and they almost look like they might be some edible...
And they look cold to me. See how the knuckles are quite red?
Yes.
He's working pretty hard.
But we get a little bit of sort of calm coming from this one.
Now, the story to that was that I've been involved in food for many, many years, and I've heard about stabilised whipped cream.
Stabilised.
I thought
whipped
it was time
cream.
I knew A, what that was, and B, how to do it. So I Googled it. Very, very complicated. It's whipped cream with a bit of gelatine in it. So I thought, right, well, I've now made this stabilised whipped cream. Now I need to take pictures with it. So I had these little scones and these very pretty, beautiful strawberries.
They look perfect, those strawberries.
And everything I set up, as usual with me, I have this idea in my mind about what I want to do. And then it doesn't work out. And I go, oh, damn it, I'll just do this then.
I'll have to eat them anyway.
So I got all these little pretty plates, and I deliberately put it on this rough-looking board, and I called it morning tea in the wool shed because I thought it was kind of a fancy thing.
Yeah.
And I was busy practicing different ways of piping my beautiful...
See the shearers coming up, having just been doing some mulesing and hopping into the...
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, sure. What have we got here?
That's called The Secret Life of Cape Gooseberries. And I, apart from really loving eating Cape Gooseberries, I just loved the way their the shapes of their husks are kind of, to me, they're sort of a bit like dancers.
Mm.
So I deliberately set this photograph up so that you can hardly see any berries.
Yes. Well, can you?
Almost. Just there.
You can. That's the shape at the bottom.
And just the tiniest. But you can't really, though.
So did you do that by hand? Did you design that?
Yeah.
Yes. Well, that gives one a really good idea about how one sets it up. I mean, are there any particular tricks or, I mean, lighting must be incredibly important to all of this.
Does
the food get subjected to about 15 different strobes coming down on it or the like?
I pretty much always work with one light.
Yeah.
I was, up until a couple of years ago, I was working just with natural light, and I got to a point where I thought, if you want to do this with any kind of credibility and professionalism, you can't be saying to clients, well, I can only work while the sun's up. So life has been quite a large and constant learning curve for several years now. So that was the next step, was to get more proficient using lighting. And it's actually my preferred option now, because you've got consistency no matter what the weather's doing. And I prefer to keep it quite simple, so I mostly use just one light.
Now, tell me, all the photos we've looked at have focused in on the food in its immediate presentation. As you've described it, do food photographers ever have people?
Yes. If you're going out and doing it professionally, you need to be able to look beyond the food. So I have had jobs where I've... you need to be able to photograph. For example, that sauerkraut one, I've done work at places like Millbrook Winery where it is photographing the food, but you need to be able to shoot the chef, maybe.
That's adding something bigger for the client.
Yes.
We, who you can see, produce and give you this wonderful food.
Last year I did some work for Clancy's Fish Pubs, which I think probably fairly well known here. And so that was the venue and customers and drinks and food, so it was a more broad sort of a brief.
It's broader photography.
Yeah.
It's and if someone said to you, you're out at a dinner party perhaps, and I said, so where am I likely to see? Have I seen your work around, Harriet? What would be something obvious that they might have seen without realising it?
Well, if they've pulled up to a servo and seen a sandwich board with a Mrs. Max pie and a sausage roll on it.
Is that you?
That.
Oh, really?
That was actually with my food styling hat on, but I have done photography as well as food styling for Mrs. Max. I've been on, played both roles for them. The Dome Cafe Group, I've been working for them for, I think this is my sixth year as a stylist. And so if you go into a Dome Cafe and open a menu, I will have arranged that food. They're quite a good example, actually, of, you know, people say, oh, you must have done stuff to the food because it doesn't look like that when we get it. Well, actually, Dome are really very, not rigid isn't the word I want, but emphatic that what we use in the photographs has to be the amount of food that the customer is going to get. So I get literally the same amount of food, and I have to make it look nice, which is good. I mean, it's a big franchise, and there's hundreds of people in the kitchen, and the point is that they need to be able to all produce the same thing. So it's not going to look how I've done it, because I've had the...
They're reproducing, you know, and having replicating pretty closely what you get.
Yes.
Now, you started off talking about how, well, you've mentioned television advertisements and people, a friend in the film industry and that. Have you... And I mentioned this sort of not quite favourite film about the thief, the cook, and his wife and her lover, and we've looked at that photograph.
Yeah.
Have you found your way into film?
Yes. In New Zealand, I worked on some of the well-known ones. I did the food. They called me a food technician. I did the props food for the Lord of the Rings trilogy.
Lord of the Rings. You can't go to New Zealand these days, at least last time I was there, without being drawn into it.
Yes, well, I was one of the cast of thousands who was involved in that,
so
that set,
you,
set of
so
films.
So what were you doing?
I was making props food. So I designed and made all the Lembas bread.
This has got nothing to do with feeding the cast.
No, not at all. In fact, I think probably the actors hated me because the Lembas bread wasn't very interesting to eat. I made all the props food for, there's a big scene for Bilbo Baggins' birthday party.
Right.
But over a period of years, they'd come to me with like really strange requests. If you look at, there's an opening scene where Gollum's in his cave and in the background is a fish skeleton.
Right.
I was the one who got the phone call saying, if we bring you these fish, can you make it into skeletons by this afternoon? I'm like, okay. And they turned up with literally a mass of whole ungutted fish. And a few hours later came back and I presented them with skeletons.
You basically had to fillet the fish.
It was worse than that.
Well, there might be the delicate listeners here.
There was a certain amount of boiling and water blasting and eye gouging and
oh well, that sounds like there might have been some nice fish soup at the end.
When they came back and said, wow, that's amazing, because here are your pristine fish skeletons, and I said, yes, it is amazing, this bag over here is also for you. And they said, what's that? And I said, that's the rest of the fish. It's your problem to make that go away.
Harriet, we're getting towards the end of our discussion. It's been fascinating. I've always wanted to have an agent. I don't have an agent. Do you have an agent?
Not yet.
How do people get in touch with you? They'll be able to click onto the link that takes them to your website and all sorts of contact details. But if people want to chase you up, is that how they do it?
Yes, there's a contact form on my website. Or if they're Instagram followers, I think you can contact me by email or phone through that, or Facebook page.
Yes.
I think I'm reasonably easy to find these days if you Google me.
Yes. Well, congratulations on this recent
Thank you.
Pink Lady Award in the Marks and Spencer section. And is that something that you keep doing, entering these competitions?
Well, I will now. I nearly didn't enter this year, but I'll certainly be entering again.
Well, good luck with everything you're doing.
Thank you very much.
It's been fascinating, been highly educational and very informative.
Well, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you.